The following segment is a paid commercial program by Christensen PLLP. It's time for Ask the Expert on News Talk 1340 KWLM.
And joining us in studios today to talk some taxes and tax provisions, we welcome Joel Gratz, a partner with Christensen PLLP. Good to see you, Joel.
Good to see you, Bill. How was your weekend?
Chilly.
Wow. Is this weather something else?
Hats off to those football players and fans that braved the weather, and to the deer hunters and so forth, and to the deer. Well, it's got to be quite a change for them, too.
Let's not feel too bad for the deer, I guess, at this point. But, yeah, what about football in the area? Is this great? How many teams we got, you know, still alive? That's fantastic.
Yeah, it is. It's a lot of fun, I'm sure. And memories that are being made that they'll likely remember 30, 40, 50 years down the road, I imagine.
I would sure think so. I mean, this is pretty special for all those teams. Painesville, Bold, and Wilmer, right? Still rolling? That's great.
Well, today you want to talk some, it says, new or modified tax provisions that will impact the individual taxpayer the most. And, you know, we just had the election last week, and it sounds like one of the first orders of business for the state legislature is to bring to conformity some of the tax, you know, provisions that were passed federally last year that they didn't bother ratifying or conforming to, I guess, if you will.
Yeah, we're one of the few states where Minnesota taxable income starts with the federal taxable income. So anything that the federal legislators enacted, Minnesota has to either oblige or not. And as we know, the House and the Senate had approved bills to do some conforming, not 100%. The governor vetoed that. And we're sitting here today with a non-conform situation. I know all the legislators here in Minnesota I visited with, you know, just like you said, Bill, are anticipating doing that right away in January. And the question they asked me was, is that a good idea or a bad idea? And I guess there's kind of a twofold answer in my opinion. It'd be great if it was conformed. Right now, it's gonna add complexity to everybody's tax return, from itemized deductions and other things that are happening as a business owner, as an individual. So it'd be great to have that. However, having a January change for the 18 tax year, I think is going to create some havoc with the software companies, with the Minnesota Department of Revenue people who have to get the forms ready to go. My thought was right behind that bill, they should actually engage and say that the individual tax returns will be extended, you know, beyond the April 15th to give everybody time to get everything lined up. Otherwise, they're going to have a lot of errors, a lot of issues. So I kind of told them my opinion. I don't know if it matters. It's probably only worth 2 cents, but that's what I told the people I visited with, and we'll wait and see if they can get it done.
Makes sense, though, like you said, if you're going to wait that long, you know, to at least maybe a month or two of an extension time to get filed. And otherwise, it's just going to be a lot of amended forms. And like you say, you know, kind of a nightmare, it sounds like. Say they don't get it ratified then or don't conform. Then what happens? I mean, is everybody, are you guys up to speed as to, you know, what is it mostly for those that itemize, or is it even people that take a standard deduction?
It's all the above, Bill. I'll be honest. There's enough things that changed federally that a conformity or a lack of conformity, you know, in January, basically every line will have to be reviewed, and you'll be doing another tax return. So you'll have your federal tax return under its new rules, and then you'll have to take that federal and modify it to be a pre-2018 federal tax return. So it could be probably 1 to 2 hours more time for every return, because I'll be duplicating my work for another set of rules. So not only will I have the federal book of business, if you will, I'll have to do the Minnesota as well under a whole other set of rules. And it's going to add complexity. I know for folks who do their own, it's going to add complexity they've never been probably used to before. So if it doesn't get conformed and you've been doing your own tax return, I guarantee that Minnesota piece is going to add some complexity you were not anticipating.
And will there be software then that will be updated to deal with that, or do you anticipate?
That's the hope. Yeah, I mean, my software will, but it takes time for all the programming. And with all the federal changes that are going on right now, we normally would have gotten our 2018 software update, and that is still being worked on. And I'm pretty sure they're working night and day to try to get this stuff figured out. And like other years, I might have Minnesota clients that are paying more Minnesota income tax than federal.
Mm-hmm.
For a lot of reasons, depreciation isn't the same. You mentioned standard deduction, itemized deductions are not the same. You know, credits aren't the same. The new, you know, 199A deduction we talked about last time is not on Minnesota, which is a 20% deduction for most business owners out there. So it's a substantial difference where it's very possible without conformity, the Minnesota taxable income may be higher and someone may end up paying more Minnesota tax than they do federal, which in my opinion, seems odd when you look at the brackets, when the highest bracket at Minnesota is 9.8 and they're going to be paying more federal tax. So it's, I'm just not sure if they're going to get it done. I'm not sure what Governor-elect Walz's opinion is on this. Have you heard, Bill, what he's thinking on the conformity?
I thought he said something about that being one of the first things
on.
I thought he said that the other, like last Friday, I thought, or one of the days, that it'll be first and foremost on their plate to work on that. But here's another question along those lines. I believe when this federal, you know, massive tax cut went into place, that didn't it affect even like people that are on regular W-2 wages, where they took out less money then?
Well, I think for those folks, it's probably, besides the business owners who get that 20% deduction, there's enough changes where I think it's going to be pretty substantial for those people. Now, child tax credits doubled to $2,000 per child, where it was $1,000 before, but they took away all of our personal exemptions, you know, which was, you know, about a $4,000 deduction. Now, a credit's much more valuable than a deduction, as you know, Bill. So that was kind of a, maybe a, I'd call it a wash. But then they increased the standard deduction from 12.3, I think it was last year, to now it's 24,000 married filing joint. And I think that's probably the biggest win, where a lot of our folks, you know, were just having enough dollars when you combine all of your expenses to, in fact, itemize, which is meaning your charitable donations, your mortgage interest, your real estate taxes, income tax, all of that add up to greater than the $12,300. Then they were an itemizer. Most people were just above that number. So now by doubling it about to the 24, I think that's where the bigger play is going to be. For most people who are those W-2 people that generally are maybe more straightforward tax returns. On top of that, every bracket, for the most part, if it last year was 15%, now it's 12. So, I mean, there is that savings that's going to come into play as well. So I feel, you know, some people are going to be winners. Some people are going to be losers on this deal. I think there'll be more winners than losers as far as how much tax they might pay year on year. So it's it's going to be interesting. In our office, you know, we probably had, I'm going to try to shoot off the hip here, but I would say itemized deduction people were probably in that 60%. And now we think itemizing will be only about maybe 20%. So it's going to be a dramatic change. But again, that's federally. They may still be itemizing for Minnesota, which is back to that kind of where you started, Bill. It's going to be a whole another set of books and rules we have to kind of trail through.
Yeah. Let's see. What else do you have here, Joel? You mentioned on your itemized deductions, I guess, as far as there's tax planning ideas, I guess, to capture some of these tax benefits. What would you suggest there?
You know, charitable contributions, you know, we've been pretty blessed. We have a very philanthropic, I think, community, and a lot of people donate to their organizations because their heart calls them to do. I really believe that. However, in a given year, if you have maybe a better year, you may end up paying more or timing your deductions. You know, if you're going to give them anyway, let's try to maximize our deduction with a now higher standard deduction. A dollar-for-dollar charitable donation, unless it's very significant, really loses its value when it comes to the tax benefit. And again, I want to make sure everybody knows I'm not suggesting we all should donate only to get a tax deduction. You still need to be philanthropically minded, of course. But that's going to be a big change. Now, for folks who have achieved the age during the tax year of 70 and a half, and they've got IRA money that they have to have a required minimum distribution each year, we're suggesting now, instead of taking that into income and then writing a check, if you will, to your charitable organization, you have the opportunity to do a direct transfer from your IRA to your charitable organization. And that, in a sense, gives you the deduction because you do not have to claim that as income under 1040. So that, I think that's a neat opportunity that, if you haven't been using that, I think that's something that will become a no-brainer. If you're going to be a standard deduction person, It's a no-brainer to do that. You need to do that, obviously, probably early in the year to get that lined up, because there's paperwork and such you have to take care of. The other item relating to charitable donations, if you have investments in stock or equities out there, you could gift appreciated stock directly to your charitable organization, who then sells it. You get a deduction at fair value, and you don't have to claim it as income, the gain on the sale, the capital gain. So there's a really neat opportunity, I think, as well, where you can kind of keep it off the table, still get your deduction that way by not claiming the income, and get a full pop. If you were happening to itemize, you would get a full pop deduction for the fair value versus what you paid for it.
I see.
So that's, I think, some really neat opportunities out there on the charity side.
Because I think some of the charities were a little concerned that they might see their donations drop as a result of the fact that, people couldn't possibly deduct them. So.
And I think there might be. You know, there are people who probably are tax motivated, who maybe make that last $2,000-$3,000, charitable deduction, if you will, because of the tax benefits, for sure.
Yeah. So what about income tax credits then? What changes are you looking at there then, Joel?
Yeah, and I already mentioned that a little bit about the big ones, the child tax credits. Mm-hmm. We've had $1,000 credit on the books for children 16 or younger, where you get that, where it could be refundable in cash if you don't have enough tax to pay on it. Now it's $2,000 per child, and they created a new $500 tax credit for children and other dependents who are over 16. They call it the family tax credit now. So if you got a kid in college, obviously, who is above 16, in years past, you've gotten a zero on that. But now you'd get a $500 tax credit, which is, I think, good. That's an added benefit to a lot of us out there who got some college kids that were still
paying
some bills.
Is there a cutoff age then where you can't claim that any longer?
They still got to be going to college. Mm-hmm. As soon as they graduate, it's a done deal on that. And you still got to be contributing, over half of their needs during the year, which includes tuition if you are paying the college tuition and such. The other awesome deal on those credits is they've increased the phase outs. A lot of my clients, if mom and dad are working, it didn't take very long and you start getting phased out of these credits. Mm-hmm. They've made them enormous now, where I want to say it's $400,000 before you get phased out. So that'll be a big win for some people who've never had the credits because of being phased out. Will now get that credit back. So that's probably the big stuff, when it comes to our listeners and how they'll be impacted, will be those credits for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as you said right at the outset, credits always tend to favor you more than a deduction.
Powerful, right? You get a lot more leverage out of a tax credit than you do out of a deduction. So that's a positive. And if I could swing back, Bill, back to the itemized deductions,
yes.
The one that people were talking about is now there's a cap on the federal side if you're itemizing on the income or the state taxes, real estate taxes, and things like that. That's now capped at $10,000. Mm-hmm. In a very heavily taxed state of Minnesota that we are, a lot of my business owners were getting a deduction for the tax they were paying, so it didn't hurt quite as bad.
Right.
Now it's capped at $10,000 cumulative for your state income tax and or your sales tax in Minnesota, plus your real estate taxes that you pay on your house and your cabin, all of that stuff. That's capped at $10,000. And that's going to limit a lot of people. Now, the flip side to that is some of my clients who are having a massive state tax deduction were also getting hit by the AMT tax, because that's a preference item. And another set of books, Bill, that we have to keep track of when we're doing taxes. Now, with that being capped at 10 and the AMT exemption being many thousand dollars higher, I think the AMT tax is going to go bye-bye for a lot of my people. So that's going to be a win. So there's so many moving parts right now, Bill. I wish I could tell everybody they're going to be a winner, you know, when it comes to the tax lottery here. But I really have to play it out, and you got to do step by step because there's so many things that have changed. But one caveat, a lot of people concerned, well, do I get to deduct any real estate taxes? Like if I rent my farmland out, do I get to have a deduction for that if I've already got $10,000 someplace else? And the very clear answer is any type of investment asset you pay real estate taxes on and you receive it, you know, have rent on it, you can still 100% deduct those. So don't fear that those deductions are still available. Again, for the rentals out there, you know, if it's commercial property, farmland, if you do rent out your cabin and you treat it as a rental, all those things are intact, and you still get those deductions. So that's all, you know, a win, if you will, in that way, because there was a time where we all thought it was $10,000 total per taxpayer, and that would be severely detrimental for a lot of people who have that type of investment property.
Yeah. No, I remember when you first came in when, you know, that was kind of the fear that it was going to really affect negatively a lot of people. And so now when you get, say you get a refund on your estate the way it presently is, that gets applied the next year, though, onto your federal taxable income, right?
It potentially can be if you received a federal benefit, meaning if you were an itemizer and you got a benefit for that state tax, that refund would be taxable income. But now if more people, in my opinion, going to be get a standard deduction, that would probably go away. You would not receive the direct impact of that. So that would be, you know, a win, if you will, on the federal side for the most part. So that's how that works.
So where do you feel that the vast majority of, say, small business people or even high wage earners, what percent do you think they're going to fall into them with this new federal tax?
I mean, as far as the tax
bracket? Yeah, the bracket, right.
You know, the brackets did go up a tad, as well as a 3% per bracket, you know, tax rate deduction. You know, and there is still a big jump. You know, it starts at 10%, then it goes to 12, then it jumps to 22. So there's that's the biggest jump in the bracket of the seven brackets. And my thought is that most of my people will probably start getting into the 22% federal bracket.
Okay.
And I don't know if we can manage them and plan them out of it, but there is some opportunity there. So probably the 22% bracket federally is where the last, and it's graduated, you know, so it isn't like every dollar gets taxed at 22.
See.
It's that last bit that you spill over. For a married filing joint, anything, I think it's over $77,000 of taxable income starts being taxed at 22%.
And how would that compare to the Minnesota rate then for, say, that same bracket?
That same bracket is probably going to be closer to the 6.5% bracket, which is the second highest. The next one jumps, or is there a 7.5? I'm sorry, I wasn't prepared for that. But it's somewhere in there that it goes to the 9.8. So
that's
that would probably
the highest it can be then.
9.8 is the highest it can be on the Minnesota side.
Yeah.
Right, which is very high in the union. I mean, we're one of the highest. I want to say
fourth
top five.
Yeah,
it's somewhere in there that it's it's ridiculously high, in my opinion.
Yeah. So basically, I mean, you could conceivably, you know, is 22 the highest on the federal, or can it be even higher? Say you're one of these million-dollar type.
The million-dollar guys, like, not you and I, but the guys who are in that bracket. I'm sorry, I shouldn't assume, Bill. Maybe you are $1 million taxpayer.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
Maybe in my lifetime. Yeah, no. 70 years of work, maybe I'll
same here. If you're $1 million person on taxable income, that's going to be 37%.
Okay.
Yeah, so it goes 22, 25... I want to say, and I should have wrote them down, Bill.
No, that's okay.
After the weekend, you know, I'm a little fuzzy here. I guess on Monday morning, but then there's a 35 and a 37. So it's it gets really compressed at the top. So you don't have that big jump. So you get there once you climb over the 22. You get to the highest bracket, you know, relatively fast, and that's at 500,000 of taxable income. And when you get there, you're at the max, the 37% federally.
I see.
Yeah,
because they always banter about some of these, you know, claims that some of these really super wealthy, I mean, you know, percentage-wise, they always say they don't pay as much as, you know, people that are paying 10%, you know, that type of thing.
That's a whole other discussion.
I know that. I mean, yeah, volume-wise, even if they've got everything, their ducks in a row, and they've got great accountants, and maybe actually have an accounting firm that they own, just to handle their books, I mean, it could easily be. I mean, some of these bigger operations.
The primary reason just to answer that question, mm-hmm. I don't know how we're doing on time, but to answer the question why that works out that way, when you get to that level, you start getting taxed differently or you organize your businesses differently. Here mm-hmm. in West Central Minnesota, we have S-Corps and partnerships where we flow it down to the individual for one level of taxation. That's the most efficient for what I call small business. But when mm-hmm. you get to that bigger business feel, you probably are going to be in a C-Corp situation, mm-hmm. which sounds bad because the C-Corp has to pay tax. But at that level, you're retaining equity, and it's a whole nother business reason why you're doing this. So that owner is getting dividends instead of income, regular income. And there's right. a preferred rate mm-hmm. on dividends, which is capped. If you've held your stock for more than a year, it's capped at 15%.
Oh, okay.
On this, you jump to the next bracket, which would be 20%, which is over the $500,000. So if you are the millionaire person and you're getting a majority of your income from investments, mm-hmm. 20% is your cap, whereas my business owner is paying 22. Mm-hmm. You know, so, I mean, that's probably where you're getting some of that. And is that right or wrong? I don't know. That's been on the books for probably about 10, 12 years. Mm-hmm. And that was done back when the economy was struggling and we were in a recession. And they needed people to invest,
right.
those people, the big money people, to invest in their companies. Mm-hmm. That's how that kind of
was. That was kind of an incentive for them to do that.
Yeah, and it was. I think it did mm-hmm. its trick on that. But that would be the reason why there's a lot of times a big difference on those people where they have mm-hmm. higher taxable incomes, yet their effective rate's substantially lower than what you would expect based upon the bracket.
Right. Well, Joel, if people have questions or they want to get an appointment scheduled to meet with a tax professional at Christensen & Associates, how do they reach you?
Yeah, give us a call at 235-5937. I've got a fully staffed team of awesome professionals. There's not just me out there that's doing mm-hmm. this stuff. We've all been going through training like crazy to get all this stuff figured out. There's regulations that are coming out daily that are still clarifying, if you will, all these things, and probably will be up until in the end of December this year. But very proud of our team at Christensen. We've got a lot of CPAs, a lot of people who have really dove into this tax law, and we feel we will be able to help just about every person that walks in the door mm-hmm. Based upon managing this new tax law.
Yeah, well, I think it would be a load off anybody's mind, I would think, if they've got any questions at all, to get somebody that's going to be there for him, too, if changes come down the pike here at the last minute.
So. Yeah, I would agree. Thanks, Bill.
All right. Have a great one, Joel.
Mm-hmm.